Chapter 140. Mistress Affery makes a conditional promise, respecting her dreams. Left alone, with the expressive looks and gestures of Mr. Baptist, otherwise Giovanni Battista Cavalletto, vividly before him, Clennam entered on a weary day. It was in vain that he tried to control his attention by directing it to any business occupation or train of thought. It rode at anchor by the haunting topic, and would hold to no other idea. As though a criminal should be chained in a stationary boat on a deep clear river, condemned, whatever countless leagues of water flowed past him, always to see the body of the fellow creature he had drowned lying at the bottom, immovable, and unchangeable, except as the eddies made it broad or long, now expanding, now contracting its terrible lineaments. So Arthur, below the shifting current of transparent thoughts, and fancies which were gone and succeeded by others, as soon as come, saw, steady and dark, and not to be stirred from its place, the one subject that he endeavored with all his might to rid himself of, and that he could not fly from. The assurance he now had, that Blandois, whatever his right name, was one of the worst of characters, greatly augmented the burden of his anxieties. Though the disappearance should be accounted for tomorrow, the fact that his mother had been in communication with such a man would remain unalterable. That the communication had been of a secret kind, and that she had been submissive to him, and afraid of him, he hoped might be known to no one beyond himself. Yet, knowing it, how could he separate it from his old vague fears, and how believe that there was nothing evil in such relations? Her resolution not to enter on the question with him, and his knowledge of her indomitable character, enhanced his sense of helplessness. It was like the oppression of a dream, to believe that shame and exposure were impending over her, and his father's memory, and to be shut out, as by a brazen wall, from the possibility of coming to their aid. The purpose he had brought home to his native country, and had ever since kept in view, was, with her greatest determination, defeated by his mother herself, at the time of all others when he feared that it pressed most. His advice, energy, activity, money, credit, all his resources whatsoever, were all made useless. If she had been possessed of the old fabled influence, and had turned those who looked upon her into stone, she could not have rendered him more completely powerless, so it seemed to him in his distress of mind, than she did, when she turned her unyielding face to his in her gloomy room. But the light of that day's discovery, shining on these considerations, roused him to take a more decided course of action. Confident in the rectitude of his purpose, and impelled by a sense of overhanging danger closing in around, he resolved, if his mother would still admit of no approach, to make a desperate appeal to Affery. If she could be brought to become communicative, and to do what lay in her to break the spell of secrecy that enshrouded the house, he might shake off the paralysis of which every hour that passed over his head made him more acutely sensible. This was the result of his day's anxiety, and this was the decision he put in practice when the day closed in. His first disappointment, on arriving at the house, was to find the door open, and Mr. Flintwinch smoking a pipe on the steps. If circumstances had been commonly favorable, Mistress Affery would have opened the door to his knock. Circumstances being uncommonly unfavorable, the door stood open, and Mr. Flintwinch was smoking his pipe on the steps. "Good evening," apostrophe said Arthur. "Good evening," apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch. The smoke came crookedly out of Mr. Flintwinch's mouth, as if it circulated through the whole of his wry figure, and came back by his wry throat, before coming forth to mingle with the smoke from the crooked chimneys, and the mists from the crooked river. "Have you any news?" apostrophe said Arthur. "We have no news," apostrophe said Jeremiah. "I mean of the foreign man," apostrophe Arthur explained. "I mean of the foreign man," apostrophe said Jeremiah. He looked so grim, as he stood askew, with the knot of his cravat under his ear, that the thought passed into Clennam's mind, and not for the first time by many, could Flintwinch for a purpose of his own, have got rid of Blandois? Could it have been his secret, and his safety, that were at issue? He was small and bent, and perhaps not actively strong, yet he was as tough as an old yew tree, and as crusty as an old jackdaw. Such a man, coming behind a much younger and more vigorous man, and having the will to put an end to him and no relenting, might do it pretty surely in that solitary place at a late hour. While, in the morbid condition of his thoughts, these thoughts drifted over the main one that was always in Clennam's mind, Mr. Flintwinch, regarding the opposite house over the gateway with his neck twisted and one eye shut up, stood smoking with a vicious expression upon him, more as if he were trying to bite off the stem of his pipe than as if he were enjoying it. Yet he was enjoying it in his own way. "You'll be able to take my likeness the next time you call, Arthur, I should think," apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch, dryly, as he stooped to knock the ashes out. Rather conscious and confused, Arthur asked his pardon if he had stared at him unpolitely. "But my mind runs so much upon this matter," apostrophe he said, "that I lose myself." Apostrophe, ha! "Yet I don't see," apostrophe returned Mr. Flintwinch, quite at his leisure, "why it should trouble you, Arthur." Apostrophe, no? Apostrophe, no, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch, very shortly and decidedly, much as if he were of the canine race, and snapped at Arthur's hand. "Is it nothing to see those placards about? Is it nothing to me to see my mother's name and residence hawked up and down in such an association?" Apostrophe, I don't see, apostrophe returned Mr. Flintwinch, scraping his horny cheek, "that it need signify much to you. But I'll tell you what I do see, Arthur," apostrophe glancing up at the windows, "I see the light of fire and candle in your mother's room." Apostrophe, and what has that to do with it? Apostrophe, why, sir, I read by it, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch, screwing himself at him, "that if it's advisable, as the proverb says it is, to let sleeping dogs lie, it's just as advisable, perhaps, to let missing dogs lie. Let 'em be. They generally turn up soon enough." Apostrophe, Mr. Flintwinch turned short round when he had made this remark, and went into the dark hall. Clennam stood there, following him with his eyes, as he dipped for a light in the phosphorus box in the little room at the side, got one after three or four dips, and lighted the dim lamp against the wall. All the while, Clennam was pursuing the probabilities rather as if they were being shown to him by an invisible hand than as if he himself were conjuring them up of Mr. Flintwinch's ways and means of doing that darker deed, and removing its traces by any of the black avenues of shadow that lay around them. "Now, sir," apostrophe said the testy Jeremiah, "will it be agreeable to walk upstairs?" Apostrophe, my mother is alone, I suppose? Apostrophe, not alone, apostrophe said Mr. Flintwinch. "Mr. Casby and his daughter are with her. They came in while I was smoking, and I stayed behind to have my smoke out." Apostrophe, this was the second disappointment. Arthur made no remark upon it, and repaired to his mother's room, where Mr. Casby and Flora had been taking tea, anchovy paste, and hot buttered toast. The relics of those delicacies were not yet removed, either from the table or from the scorched countenance of Affery, who, with the kitchen toasting fork still in her hand, looked like a sort of allegorical personage. Except that she had a considerable advantage over the general run of such personages in point of significant emblematical purpose. Flora had spread her bonnet and shawl upon the bed, with a care indicative of an intention to stay some time. Mr. Casby, too, was beaming near the hob, with his benevolent knobs shining, as if the warm butter of the toast were exuding through the patriarchal skull, and with his face as ruddy as if the coloring matter of the anchovy paste were mantling in the patriarchal visage. Seeing this, as he exchanged the usual salutations, Clennam decided to speak to his mother without postponement. It had long been customary, as she never changed her room, for those who had anything to say to her apart, to wheel her to her desk, where she sat, usually with the back of her chair turned towards the rest of the room, and the person who talked with her seated in a corner, on a stool which was always set in that place for that purpose. Except that it was long since the mother and son had spoken together without the intervention of a third person, it was an ordinary matter of course within the experience of visitors for Mrs. Clennam to be asked, with a word of apology for the interruption, if she could be spoken with on a matter of business, and, on her replying in the affirmative, to be wheeled into the position described. Therefore, when Arthur now made such an apology, and such a request, and moved her to her desk, and seated himself on the stool, Mrs. Finching merely began to talk louder and faster, as a delicate hint that she could overhear nothing, and Mr. Casby stroked his long white locks with sleepy calmness. Mother, I have heard something today which I feel persuaded you don't know, and which I think you should know, of the antecedents of that man I saw here. Apostrophe, I know nothing of the antecedents of the man you saw here, Arthur. Apostrophe, she spoke aloud. He had lowered his own voice, but she rejected that advance towards confidence as she rejected every other, and spoke in her usual key, and in her usual stern voice. I have received it on no circuitous information. It has come to me direct. Apostrophe, she asked him, exactly as before, if he were there to tell her what it was? I thought it right that you should know it. Apostrophe, and what is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he has been a prisoner in a French gaol. Apostrophe, she answered with composure, I should think that very likely. Apostrophe, apostrophe, but in a gaol for criminals, mother. On an accusation of murder. Apostrophe, she started at the word, and her looks expressed her natural horror. Yet she still spoke aloud, when she demanded. Who told you so? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a man who was his fellow prisoner. Apostrophe, that man's antecedents, I suppose, were not known to you, before he told you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no. Apostrophe, though the man himself was? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes. Apostrophe, my case and Flintwinch's, in respect of this other man. I dare say the resemblance is not so exact, though, as that your informant became known to you through a letter from a correspondent with whom he had deposited money? How does that part of the parallel stand? Apostrophe, Arthur had no choice, but to say that his informant had not become known to him through the agency of any such credentials, or indeed of any credentials at all. Mrs. Clennam's attentive frown expanded by degrees into a severe look of triumph, and she retorted with emphasis, take care how you judge others, then. I say to you, Arthur, for your good, take care how you judge. Apostrophe, apostrophe, her emphasis had been derived from her eyes quite as much as from the stress she laid upon her words. She continued to look at him, and if, when he entered the house, he had had any latent hope of prevailing in the least with her, she now looked it out of his heart. Mother, shall I do nothing to assist you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, nothing. Apostrophe, will you entrust me with no confidence, no charge, no explanation? Will you take no counsel with me? Will you not let me come near you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, how can you ask me? You separated yourself from my affairs. It was not my act, it was yours. How can you consistently ask me such a question? You know that you left me to Flintwinch, and that he occupies your place. Apostrophe, glancing at Jeremiah, Clennam saw in his very gaiters that his attention was closely directed to them, though he stood leaning against the wall scraping his jaw, and pretended to listen to Flora as she held forth in a most distracting manner on a chaos of subjects, in which Mackerel and Mr. F.S. and in a swing had become entangled with cockchafers and the wine trade. a prisoner, in a French gaol, on an accusation of murder, apostrophe repeated Mrs. Clennam, steadily going over what her son had said. That is all you know of him from the fellow prisoner? Apostrophe, apostrophe, in substance, all. Apostrophe, and was the fellow prisoner his accomplice and a murderer too? But, of course, he gives a better account of himself than of his friend. It is needless to ask. This will supply the rest of them here with something new to talk about. Casby, Arthur tells me apostrophe, stay, mother. Stay, stay. Apostrophe, he interrupted her hastily, for it had not entered his imagination that she would openly proclaim what he had told her. What now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she said with displeasure. What more? Apostrophe, I beg you to excuse me, Mr. Casby, and you too, Mrs. Finching, for one other moment with my mother. Apostrophe, he had laid his hand upon her chair, or she would otherwise have wheeled it round with the touch of her foot upon the ground. They were still face to face. She looked at him, as he ran over the possibilities of some result he had not intended, and could not foresee, being influenced by Cavaletto's disclosure becoming a matter of notoriety, and hurriedly arrived at the conclusion that it had best not be talked about, though perhaps he was guided by no Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.